nice to be here at the temple in, where am I today, Melbourne. This is, my wife and I have been traveling, I guess we've been here about 2 weeks now. So we've been to the different temples, and Melbourne is the nicest temple in Australia. I've been very eager to come here for many reasons. Before I start, first I'd like to thank all my many God brothers and God sisters here. Of course, Kurma Prabhu, who wrote one of the nicest books about Srila Prabhupada's great transcendental adventures, and I enjoy reading it very much. And he was also very kind to me in there, and I thank you for that. And my God brother, Bhanu Maharaj, also for allowing me to speak here today. I last came to this temple, I first came here to Australia with Srila Prabhupada in 1973. And it was February of 1973 when we came to Melbourne. So that was approximately 34 years ago. So probably half of the devotees here weren't even alive in their present bodies 34 years ago. So it was quite a long time ago. And for me, it was like a whole lifetime. It was a lifetime ago. And it's hard to imagine sometimes. I just starting to get some realizations of how Prabhupada used to speak about time, the time factor, and how quickly it passes. So, and it's also been about 34 years since. At that time it was Bhanu Das Brahmachari, I think it was with the Namhatta group, Guru Kripa, who I just saw in Hawaii 2 weeks ago. That was also very interesting. My one and only GBC when I was a temple president in Hawaii back in 1977. So anyway, it's what Prabhupada has given us is just more apparent all the time. And I think he's given us so many gifts, Srila Prabhupada. And one of the greatest gifts of all is he's given us association, you know, with the devotees, with other devotees. Well, our big family, our very big ISKCON family that we have, it's so wonderful. So I just want to express appreciation for all of your being here, and especially for those that I've known for so long and always helped me try to remain close to Srila Prabhupada. So I was saying, I first came here, and this temple is also very special to me. And these deities, Radha Ballabha, are also very special to me. And most of you would probably know at this point, if you've read your history about Srila Prabhupada in Australia, you know that these deities arrived here in 1973 as well. In Melbourne on February. It was February of 1973 when Srila Prabhupada arrived. And it was always interesting coming to Australia with Srila Prabhupada. And I'm happy to say we followed in the same suit this morning arriving at the temple. We were waiting for the car for 45 minutes. And I felt like I was in the proper sampradaya of Srila Prabhupada's Australian yatra sampradaya, where he would wait for vehicles and walk into temples unexpectedly. And so I felt very comfortable in that, waiting for the car this morning to pick us up. But I came here the first time. It was with Bali Mardan, who was also very instrumental in helping establish the temples here in the South Pacific in Australia. And that trip was a very wonderful trip. And because both, I guess it was Mudit Visa he had arranged for Prabhupada's coming that time as well, perhaps. And he was very good, Mudit Visa, because everywhere Prabhupada went, he always traveled with three devotees. He always had his secretary, his servant, and his Sanskrit editor, because he was translating everywhere he went. So they were instrumental and pretty much went everywhere around the world. But Mudit Visa always managed to squeeze it into the secretary and the servant, because coming here, of course, was out of the way and it was costly, and he would make arrangements to get Srila Prabhupada here. And coming here and seeing it now, it also, I find it really wonderful that Prabhupada came here so many times to Australia. Because as everyone knows, coming to Australia is definitely a long journey from almost everywhere. Definitely, it's not called Down Under for no reason at all. It's really like, it's just like it's another planet to come here. And I see the fact that Prabhupada came here so often shows how much he loved Madhavisa and all of the devotees here. And it's apparent how much benedictions you've received from Srila Prabhupada, how much mercy you've gotten from Srila Prabhupada. So that trip, again, was a very special trip, and it was a very unique journey from Calcutta through Bangkok to Melbourne by way of Sydney, because Bali Mardana and I were carrying their lordships, Radha Vallabha. And they were very big. And we carried them right on the plane with us. And I can remember that. I remember leaving Calcutta. And as I said, we had all of Prabhupada's things. And somehow or other, Bali Mardan, I carried Radharani, I carried Krishna. And we had to take them in and out of the plane in Bangkok, in Thailand. And then again, in and out of the plane in Sydney. And then finally coming to Melbourne. And as Kurma mentioned in his book, I actually got one realization at that time from Srila Prabhupada, which is always I think about sometimes. And he mentioned that at the airport, I think, believe it was the airport while we were in Sydney, because he saw us, and everywhere we went, we just had the deities right beside us in the seat. Airplane travel wasn't quite as difficult then as it is now. Almost taking anything into an airport is very difficult, but at that time we just carried the deities with us and put them on their seats and put their seat belts around them, and it was a very wonderful thing to do. And I felt so, to do a service like that, you just felt like it was really special, because it was Radha and Krishna, you know, it was. And I never thought too much about it. At that time I was young and massaging Prabhupada every day, and I was a little strong, so it wasn't so difficult. But I remember sitting next to Prabhupada, Radha and Krishna and Bali Mardan, in the airport, and Prabhupada looked at me and he said, "What you're doing," he said, "is very wonderful service." He said, "Taking such difficulty for Krishna, carrying the deities," he said, "to take such difficulty for Krishna," he said, is very good. He said, and Krishna is pleased. So when Prabhupada said that, of course, you could understand that Krishna was pleased. There he was. He was right there. You didn't have to think of some abstract person or a person you couldn't see. But he said Krishna was pleased that we were doing this service. And he just smiled. And then I realized Prabhupada was very pleased that we were doing this service. And of course, I was with Prabhupada for 2.5 years. And many times he would show his gratitude for the service that all of us were doing and the service that I was doing. But when he said it at that time, I realized how simple Srila Prabhupada has made it for us to become Krishna conscious. It's this very simple process. You just have to please your spiritual master. And Prabhupada wasn't difficult to please. Prabhupada was, in fact, very easy to please. You read so many stories and you hear about Srila Prabhupada, which is also, it's so nice. You're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam every day. And Srila Prabhupada, when all in the Bhagavatam and when he would give classes, he spoke the absolute truth. And sometimes, at least I find it very overwhelming, sometimes Srila Prabhupada's purports in the process of becoming Krishna conscious. But what Prabhupada did, personalizing that, as we know, Prabhupada was the person Bhagavat. Srila Prabhupada, he was like the walking, talking Srimad Bhagavatam for us. He was an example of not just how to become Krishna conscious, but what a Krishna conscious person was like. And it was a very sweet person. It was a very wonderful, compassionate, loving person. So this was Srila Prabhupada. So hopefully over the next few days, I think I speak this evening, and tomorrow morning there'll be an extended class in the morning, and then Bhanu Maharaj will give class in the evening, Gaur Purnima. And then Monday morning I think I may be giving class again. So in these classes we'll just be telling some of these pastimes about Srila Prabhupada and just how glorious Srila Prabhupada still is, how glorious it was to be with him, to do service with him, to do service for him, and how he continues to just encourage all of us to be Krishna conscious, which is what Prabhupada always did. Everything he did, every way he interacted with each of us was to encourage us in our Krishna consciousness. You know, it helped us advance in Krishna consciousness. If he chastised us, if he smiled at us, if he said one word, whatever it was to help you advance in Krishna consciousness. In fact, when I was first with him, just for a few weeks, Prabhupada was in Texas, and he was on a morning walk, which, to be with Prabhupada, you can try to imagine. When Prabhupada was here, the devotees, of course, we would travel great distances. Sometimes they would drive just like from the east coast of the U.S. all the way to the west coast, which was like going from Sydney to Perth, and to see Prabhupada for some however many days, to be able to sit, you know, in front of him and hear him give class, just to see Prabhupada's beautiful face, his eyes. Of course, everything always focused gradually as you were in front of Prabhupada, and you would look at his lotus feet and then see his form. And then you would always have to focus on Prabhupada's eyes, because from Prabhupada's eyes, then you could see what it was to love Krishna, you know, and you could see what it was, how much someone loved you, because Prabhupada just showed so much compassion. And his eyes, they always were wet. They always sparkled, because they always seemed to have some amount of tears in them, Prabhupada's eyes. But he just showed so much love for everyone. And when he looked at you, and some devotees will tell you that, some of my god brothers and god sisters, Prabhupada never even spoke one word to them personally. But he looked at them. And that look was something they carry in their hearts for their whole life. They'll never forget just one look. So at this time in Dallas on the morning walk, anyone, if you got an opportunity to go on a morning walk, it was really a wonderful thing. And is what would happen many times is devotees, they would get a real desire to ask Prabhupada a question, to somehow interact with him, right, on a morning walk, because after seeing him, then that's the next thing, to actually have Prabhupada say something to you, or for you to say, answer a question or some statement or something. But it wasn't always an easy thing to do, because when we first saw Prabhupada, there would be a lot of anxiety. Basically, I mean, your whole mind could just go blank. You know, we can go back to when we would take initiation. So many devotees, and Prabhupada would say, "What are the regulative principles?" Well, you wouldn't remember all four of them, you know. And it wasn't because you didn't know them or you weren't following them. It was because when Prabhupada said, "What are the regulative principles?" you would just freeze. And it was just when I was initiated in New York, Kushakrata. I don't know Kushakrata, he was a big erudite scholar. He translated so many books before his passing last year. And he went up to Srila Prabhupada for his initiation in 1971, the same time I was initiated. And Prabhupada said, what are the regulative principles? And he said, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex. And he couldn't remember the last one. And Prabhupada looked at him and he smiled. And Kushikrata said, well, Prabhupada, you've read my mind. And Prabhupada said, that's all right. He said. So that's what it was like to be in Prabhupada's presence. So to be on the morning walk, sometimes when Prabhupada would ask those questions, everyone wanted the answer, but so many things would go through your mind and you think, what if I give the wrong answer? Because whenever Prabhupada asked the question, devotees, and myself, I would do that as well, even as his servant. When he would ask something, you would think you were being tested. And if you didn't give the right answer, then you failed your Krishna conscious test, as if we were ever passing our Krishna conscious test around Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was never judging us. Prabhupada was interacting with us. He was training us. He was teaching us. He was just loving us. So this one boy is on the morning walk. And the whole walk, I'm sure he just wanted to ask Prabhupada a question, this question. But he never did. He never found the opportunity to do it. So then the walk is over. So now Prabhupada's getting into the car and I'm holding the door open for him. And Prabhupada gets in and he sits down. And I'm just about to shut the door and this devotee's still standing there with his hands folded. And very quickly said, Prabhupada, he said, how do I become Krishna conscious? Imagine such a question as Prabhupada getting into his car and I'm ready to shut the door. Would have been a nice question during the walk, but at that time it seemed like it would be very difficult, right? Such a profound question. How do I become Krishna conscious? So I'm just about to shut the door and Prabhupada looks at him and he said, one word. That was it. He said, one word. And he said it very emphatically, how to do it. And then I closed the door and I walked in and I got on the other side and the devotee was completely satisfied. And he didn't say chanting. That wasn't the word, chanting. What one word? How do we become Krishna conscious? So many one words we could say, huh? See, and this is what would happen. No one would ever want to say anything because we think, well, I'm going to say the wrong word. It's not the proper word. And that's what it was like when we were with Prabhupada. We would be a little afraid what to say. So I'll tell you, since no one is volunteering, anyone want to think? It's a three-syllable word. It's not surrender either. So see, just see. But it was perfect. And Prabhupada answered him just like that. Because Prabhupada was perfect. Prabhupada's perfect. And he had the perfect answer. And when you hear it, you'll understand that's how to become Krishna conscious. It's the only thing we need. Desire. You see, Prabhupada was just, he was wonderful. You know, and that's what he could do. Now that devotee, I'm sure, he must think of that every day. In how to become Krishna, how to become Krishna conscious. We just have to desire it. Because that's all we do. We're always desiring so many things. We always have so many desires. But that one thing, we just have to desire Krishna. And more than anything, that's what Prabhupada showed us 24 hours a day. What it was like to desire Krishna. What a person does when they're always desiring Krishna. That's what Prabhupada just wanted, Krishna. Didn't want anything else. He didn't care about temples or disciples, anything. He just wanted to serve the spiritual master's order. He just wanted Krishna. So, anyway, these are some of the things when you were with Prabhupada. It was just so wonderful. He could just immediately, he would just always knew what to say. He would have the perfect answer for everyone to help them in their Krishna consciousness. And that's what Prabhupada also, he was a person, he was a Krishna conscious person, a spiritual master. And he knew for each and every one, as spiritual master, he knew just what we needed to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. And it was individual. He treated us all as individuals with lots of love and trust. And it said this spiritual master, he gave us our spark for Krishna consciousness. But then he fanned it, increased that fire. And it said, just like a spark, if you fan it too hard, you put it out. And if you don't fan it hard enough, it also goes out from lack of air. But Prabhupada knew just what to do. And each one is different. It's not that everyone gets fanned the same way. This is expert. Prabhupada was so expert in his dealings with everyone. You know, and even amongst groups, like the men, Prabhupada, like we always hear from the men talking, telling their stories, what it was like to be with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada chastised me about this, and he yelled about this, and he told this person to do this, you know. And then you'll hear the ladies talk about Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was just so sweet. Right? He was always very sweet, and he did this. And he was. Prabhupada was so nice to the ladies. He was so sweet. And then to the children, Prabhupada was just like a grandfather, huh? Would treat their children, you know, their grandchildren. And you can see, and then sometimes he would tease them. Like you see that one video in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Prabhupada's holding on to the finger of, what was his name? Shivadwar. Swati's little boy at the time, Shivadwar. And he came and Prabhupada grabbed him and immediately just wanted to get away, and Prabhupada just held on to him for a little bit. And then he would let him go. But he was just wonderful with everyone. There was one, since we're on this topic now, there was one child, she became very famous in those days, Saraswati, back in the 70s, we all knew Saraswati. She was the daughter of Shyamasundar and Malati. And she was a very sweet, beautiful young girl. Light hair. And of course in India she was such a big hit. We were all big hits in India back in the 70s because, as Prabhupada said, we were his dancing white elephants. You know? And that's what we were. We were dancing and we were white elephants. And traveling around, I remember going from Calcutta to Mayapur with Prabhupada in the car and just getting out halfway at a stall. And this was 1973, in the middle of nowhere on the road, just this little road headed to Mayapur. And we just got out for a drink. And everyone, anywhere near, just came up just to look at us because we were white Vaishnavas. And everyone was just so amazed, you know. And Prabhupada utilized that to the fullest. And he even said, Prabhupada would say with Saraswati, he said, what a great preacher, he said, Saraswati is. Because Saraswati, when she was in India, of course, she was not only a little dancing, she was this blonde girl, she was 3-4 years old, she was this big, tilak, and talking about Krishna. So the people, the local people, they would say to her, you know, or she would say, who is Krishna? Do you know who Krishna is? And they would go, who is Krishna? She would say, he's the supreme personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada used that example in a lecture. He said, her preaching is perfect. He said, that's all we have to know. It's all we have to say. Do you know Krishna? He's the supreme personality of Godhead. And that's guru, huh? Simply taking the instructions from your spiritual master. So this Saraswati, I got to know her when I was Prabhupada's servant, because especially in India, Shyamasundar was Prabhupada's secretary at the time, and Malati would sometimes be there, and she had this little child, and she would cook for Prabhupada in India. So in Saraswati, she was on her own some of these times, on her own in the temple area. And she would just walk around and go here and there. And some of her walking would bring her right into Prabhupada's room. So she was one devotee girl. She had a pass. She could just walk in and out of Prabhupada's room whenever she wanted. She didn't have to ask anyone. There was no appointments. No one stopping her at the door. She would just walk in, walk around, and put her little wet fingers on things. And Prabhupada never said anything. And I used to think, wow, Prabhupada, you know. So one day, just before lunch, I'm giving Srila Prabhupada his massage. And Prabhupada just sat on the floor on the straw mat. And I was behind him, and I'm rubbing his back with mustard oil as hard as I could. Prabhupada said, as hard as you can. You can do my back as hard as you want. So I'm rubbing his back. And he would let you massage his back sometimes for half an hour. And that was like just part of the massage. His massage could be 1.5 hours to 2 hours, which for me was sometimes caused some anxieties. Because at that time that cooker was on. You know? That was the big challenge, cooking for Prabhupada. You would set the cooker up and turn it on a low flame and then go give Prabhupada a massage. And the whole time the cooker's in some room anywhere from 100 to 1,000 yards away or a block, just cooking away. And is all I would think the whole time I'm massaging is everything's going to be ruined. And it very rarely was. Very rarely, maybe once or twice. But I would always worry about this cooker cooking, steaming all these vegetables and rice and dal. And secretaries would come in and out with letters. And whenever they would come in, I'd think, oh no, his massage is going to be longer. Because then Prabhupada would start talking. And I'd think, oh no, it's going to go too long. And his lunch is going to be ruined. So then sometimes I would massage him harder. So he would know that I was there massaging him. Because I would think that he wasn't aware of my presence sometimes. So I'd massage him a little harder to let him know. Because you had to massage each spot until he told you to go to the next spot. Nothing was, you just did what he wanted. And one time I was massaging him for several months, and I thought, I have this all down, you know, I can just. So I massaged his head 15 minutes, then I went to his back 20 minutes, and I did this for a few days, and I would be done his massage in like 1 hour, 15 minutes or something. So after a few days, I massaged his head. And then I put the mustard oil in my hand and massaged his back. So after about 20 minutes, I put my hands down and started to get up. And he said, massage until I tell you you're done, not until you tell you you're done. So that was the last time. So then you would just massage until he went like that. And then you would go to the next spot. So that was every day. So sometimes these massages would be a very long time. And I was young and energetic, but you'd get a little tired. And then his back, he would say, you can massage my back as hard as you want. And he would just sit. He would sit like this, cross-legged, and he would just sit. And when you massaged his head and his back, he had those Tulsi gold beads came around that far. So he would pick them up and put them around his ears. So they hung around like that. They would hung just under his neck. And he would just sit there. And if no one was there, he would usually have his eyes closed. But he would be completely relaxed. Completely relaxed, just sitting. And when he said, do it as hard as you can, I would think, okay, I'm going to do it as hard as I can. And I would massage him. And then I would massage him a little harder, and I would always think, well, eventually he's going to say, okay, that's hard enough, that's good. But he never ever said it. And I just and sometimes I would try and say, he's going to say that's hard enough. But he never said it. But he never even pressed against me. Like if anyone's ever gotten massaged, sometimes you have to fix your place so you don't get pushed. But Prabhupada just sat there like nonchalantly, like nothing at all was happening, and I was just like exhausting myself, you know, massaging him and pushing and pushing, and you could never move him. And Prabhupada was not—he was like 5'4", so you know, he was not heavy at all, but he was heavy. He was a guru. He was our guru. And no matter how hard I pushed, you couldn't budge Prabhupada's body. And I would just push on his back. And he loved it. You know, he said that's what he wanted. He loved it so much. So, anyway, one of these days I'm massaging Prabhupada's back. And in comes this little Saraswati, you know. And she's got one of these cookies in her mouth, one of these Indian cookies. We used to call them, like, in the U.S., like animal crackers. You know, there were crackers in different fun shapes, you know, just a little sweet cookie thing. So she had these biscuits in India that Malati would give her, and she'd just eat all the time, chewing these biscuits in between meals. And she was just 3 years old, and she comes wandering into the room. And I'm massaging Prabhupada, and she just comes right up to Prabhupada, you know, little dress and barefoot. And she comes up, and she's just watching now because she's looked interesting, this massage, and she's just looking. And Prabhupada looked at her, and he starts laughing. And she looks, and Prabhupada said, he said, Saraswati, he said, do you know what you remind me of? You know, and she looks. And she's got this thing in her mouth, you know, just holding on, and soggy cookie thing. And she's holding it, and Prabhupada says, you remind me of the garbage trucks in New York City. And she's looking, and he says, have you ever seen the garbage trucks in New York City? And she, you know, she's still just with the cookie like this, you know. No. And he says, well, he said, so of course Prabhupada was in, right? You know, in New York City, he was there at 26th Second Avenue and at the Bowery, and big, nasty trash trucks, you know, garbage trucks, very noisy. And they always come around very early in the morning, and you know, they'd pick up the trash. And it still goes on, of course. But he said, you're like that, he said. He said, in New York City, he said, every morning, he said, these garbage trucks are there, just going down the street. And he said, and everyone puts all their trash, he said, out in the street, and they come by, and she's just listening, you know, to this story. And I'm just massaging away. Now I'm going to be doing his back at least as long as this story goes on. So he said, and then he said the men come and they get these big cans filled with trash, he said, and they throw it in, you know. And he said, first he says, they come and the man, he has a big lever. And he pulls it down. And Prabhupada, he's making all the motions. And Prabhupada told stories. He was, you know, he did an entire play, and he would use sound effects, and he would use different voices. And so he said, the man pulls the lever. He said, and the mouth would open. And Prabhupada goes, So Prabhupada opens the mouth, you know. He said, then they throw all the trash in. He said, then again the man pulls the lever, and he said, and then the mouth goes, He said, like that. He said, well, you're just like those garbage trucks, he said, always throwing so much trash into your mouth. You know, and she just looked, you know. And then she walked away, and Prabhupada just closed his eyes again. And we went on with the massage. So this is... these are the things. Prabhupada, with everyone, he was just so wonderful in dealing with everyone. And he dealt with everyone. He knew who he was dealing with. He knew how to deal with each and every one of us. And you see here in Australia, you have so many nice videos, people that came to see Srila Prabhupada. It was so exciting to see how Prabhupada dealt with them. Each person, you know, in Krishna consciousness. And even in 1975, Prabhupada never tired of talking about the basics in Krishna consciousness. We're not this body, spirit, soul, serve Krishna, and not concerned about serving what real service is. Never after 10 years, fortunately for us, he didn't think, oh, I'm tired of doing this kind of preaching work. I just want to deal with, you know, higher, more elevated souls. Talk about Radha and Krishna. Prabhupada was happily doing it. He was eager to preach, to spread Krishna consciousness as much as possible. Another one of those morning walks Prabhupada was on, and that was here. I think it was in Perth. And he stopped. You know, he would. When he was here at 75, it was really nice because Prabhupada was working on Fifth Canto, right, about the creation and the universe. And he would really, he would interact with the devotees so much. He would like to hear the scientist arguments, what the scientists say about the cosmos. And so they were very active walks. But in this one walk, he stopped. And he looked around, and there were like a dozen. And he said, so, he said, the devotee, he said, is he simple or crooked? And now this was a tough question. Immediately, another tough question. Simple or crooked? He said, what do you say? So no one would say anything. So finally, he said, crooked, huh? So finally one devotee said, huh? He said, oh, simple, Prabhupada. Prabhupada went. He said, he's crooked. He said, just like me. He said, I have tricked all of you, he said, into chanting Hare Krishna. So why is that crooked, huh? Because we say, just chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, your life will be sublime, huh? So is everyone's life sublime here? Everyone feels sublime all the time? See, that's the crooked, huh? You have to surrender to Krishna. You chant Hare Krishna. But then after you chant, you realize you have to give everything to Krishna. You have to desire only Krishna. Maintain. You can't maintain those material attachments. See? But Prabhupada, what did he do when he first came? He just chanted. He chanted Harinam. Like we do that. It's so nice. They have Harinam here in Melbourne. Three days a week, I think. It's wonderful. Probably a world record now, 3 days a week having Harinam at a temple. But this is what we did 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, distributing books. These were Prabhupada's programs, and distribute books, chanting. But that's what he did when he came to the America, when he came to the West. He just sat down and chanted and kept chanting until people were chanting with him. And he never asked anyone to do anything. If you see those very early days, you hear how Prabhupada, he would cook the prasadam, he would serve, he was doing everything. He never asked anyone to help him. And then gradually, by chanting, and just by his personality, by developing affection for him, the devotees, they started to say, can I help? And then when they asked, could they help? Oh, Prabhupada gave him so much work. Huh? And one story with Hayagriva, that's how he started his editing. He suggested to Prabhupada in Bhagavatam, he said, you say, oh the king. He said that we don't use that kind of English. He said, we would just say, oh king. And Prabhupada said, oh, very good. He said, you should do that, you know. And then he said, you know, if you want, he said, I can do some editing. Prabhupada said, oh yeah, he said, you can. Prabhupada turned around and he had his trunk with his with his papers. And each page went from one side all the way to the other. There wasn't one blank spot on the page. There were no margins. It was from the top to the bottom. And he handed him a stack and said, here, you can edit. It was Prabhupada. Krishna sent him, that was it. Prabhupada was here, edit all this, make it very nice and readable. So in that way, that's what Prabhupada would do. But at the same time, Prabhupada was so amazing as his servant when I was with him. And my job was 24 hours a day to be with Prabhupada. And even towards the end, even that became a little less. They had hours and shifts. I had one shift. It was the whole time I was with them. That was my shift. I was expected to be in my room waiting for Prabhupada to ring the bell. When I was in New Dwarka, I'd been with Prabhupada now about 6 or 8 months in Los Angeles. And Prabhupada stayed in Los Angeles often, and he would stay there for extended periods. And so I had some friends, some devotee friends, and they invited me. They kept saying, come to Mangalarti, because I never went to Mangalarti. When I was with Prabhupada, there was never any question. I was just there in case he rang his bell. And he never rang his bell at that time of the morning. You know, he would do his translating work. And you know, I would get up and I would chant, and just at the morning walk time, then that would be the first time you saw Prabhupada. So after a few days saying what I'm missing these wonderful kirtans, you know, Parikit and Bhardaraj, all these devotees were there from now BBT, the ISKCON Press and everything. They said, come, deities are beautiful and kirtans are great. Everyone comes. And Mangalartik at that time, when Prabhupada was there, there would be 200 devotees in the temple room. And it was just about this size. It was the first temple room on Matsika Avenue. So anyway, I was convinced, and I just thought, it was right down, literally right down the stairs, and Prabhupada, you saw him, he would open that door, and he walked right into the temple room. So that's what I did, and I went right into the temple room. So I was at my first Mangalarti while I was with Srila Prabhupada as a servant. So then, I'm chanting and dancing along with everyone else, doing, worshipping my spiritual master, doing prayers, samsara prayers. And then I get a tap on the back, and it's Prajumna. He was a Sanskrit editor. And Prajumna and Shyamasunda, they were older devotees. Like I was, when I went with Prabhupada, I was a new devotee. I was a devotee for 1 year. And they were like, very senior veterans. They were like veteran devotees. They had been in the movement since 67. So they were devotees for 5 years. And to us, that was, you know, like we worshiped these people. They were like, you know, they were godly themselves. These people that would say Brahman, see someone say a Gayatri mantra. When we first went into the temple, we would just look at people saying Gayatri and thought, wow, like, you know, where are they going? You know, what are they doing? And everyone, you pay your obeisances to them. They got prasadam first. They were just... So anyway, as a new devotee, these were seniors, and also being a senior, it seemed like you got up a little later than those who weren't so senior. At least in Prabhupada's entourage, it seemed that way. That they would be up for the morning walk. That was their schedule. They would go to the morning walk with Prabhupada. So anyway, he comes in and he said, Prabhupada wants to see you now. So I went in. And I went into Prabhupada's room, and he was sitting behind his desk and New Dwarka there. And I offered obeisances and sat up, and he looked at me. He said, where have you been? He said, I've been ringing this bell for hours. And I said, I'm sorry. I said, Prabhupada, I said, I was at Mangalarti. And he said, you have no business going to Mangalarti. He said, your job is to be in your room. He said, 24 hours a day. He said, if I need something, he said, what am I supposed to do? He said, if you're not there, he said, what will happen? He said, you have to be there. He said, 24 hours a day. He said, you have no business going to Mangalarti. So, to say I was the only devotee in ISKCON who was in Maya because I went to Mangalarti. It was complete Maya. Everyone else is in Maya when you sleep during Mangalarti. But I was in Maya because I went to Mangalarti, because I wasn't doing my service. But that was my service, to be available for Srila Prabhupada. And of course he never ever, never again, 2.5 years did he ever call me. A couple times he called me early in the morning. And then he would, sometimes even at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, if he wanted something, he would call you in. And then he would apologize for waking you up. In Vrindavan at Krishna Balaram temple, when his quarters were there, when they were first built, the servants' quarters was in between Prabhupada's sitting room, which was also his bed was in, and his bathroom. So Prabhupada, in the middle of the night, he would go to the bathroom sometimes once, twice at night, you know, at midnight, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was in that room in between. So every time he would go in, I would hear him, because I was a light sleeper. And Prabhupada would shuffle his feet, you know, he had this wonderful walk and he would shuffle. And so I would be lying on the floor on my side or on my back, and I'd hear him. So I would just roll over, you know, and do a dun, and I'd go, Namah. And he'd say, no. He'd say, go to sleep. And then he'd go into the bathroom. And then he would come back out after 2 minutes. And I'd hear him come back out, and I'd roll back over, and I'd go, Namah. He'd say, no, go to sleep. Don't, he'd say. And he'd just walk into his room. So it was just so sweet all the time. So to be with him, you couldn't help but love Prabhupada. Imagine to love Prabhupada. And what happens? You have to love Krishna. Because all Prabhupada gave us was Krishna. And I don't know anything. Because all I know is I carry Krishna here. That Krishna, I knew I carried him. I could relate to that. But Prabhupada just made you love him. He didn't have to, just by being himself, and by being that personification of Bhagavatam. He personified all good qualities of a devotee. And you just fell in love with him. We all fell in love with Prabhupada, right? As he traveled around the world. And he knew that. He knew that we couldn't resist falling in love with him. That was his trick too. We couldn't resist it. And because of that, he traveled around the world 15 times just to ensure that the maximum amount of people would fall in love with him and become devotees. So in this way, he just gave himself completely to everyone. So again, over the next few days, we'll discuss, talk about Srila Prabhupada, and hopefully we can all continue to be in love with Prabhupada and his ISKCON society. So does anyone have any questions or comments at this time? Yes, Prabhu.
Why did you send him? Was he chanting also at the same time? Hare Krishna.
Was I chanting?
No, Prabhupada.
Was he chanting? Prabhupada was, what was his name? Dr. Kapoor. He once said, he was Prabhupada's godbrother in Vrindavan, O.B.L. Kapoor. He once said, how did he, once he listened to Prabhupada's heart, he said, and his heart, when it beat it, it went, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Yes, we're always chanting. But he also chanted on japa beads. He would chant rounds. So many, I would see him everywhere. He would always have his japa beads with him. Once, when he went down, or he came from the morning walk and he went back in, this was also in New Dwarka, and there was bead bag and it was hanging on a doorknob. And his Prabhupada was walking up and he said, whose beads are they crying there on that doorknob? And he said they were crying because they were just left there. Prabhupada always had his beads with him. He'd always have his hand in his bead bag. And he would chant very quietly. Sometimes you couldn't hear at all. Sometimes you could hear the mantras coming. Yes. What I'm trying to do, you know, that's the purpose. It is we have to be shaken in this material world to understand. Everyone is so covered over that they have no understanding of spiritual life. And the same Prabhupada with his disciples. Sometimes Prabhupada would shock them into understanding. And as it said, it's only, you know, only the personality can cut through that false ego It requires an active principle, an active force. Even reading the Shastra, we can read Bhagavatam, and we all think whatever we want, right? Just look at, everyone has a different opinion of what's said in these books. You know, if you ask 10 people, they'll all tell you something different. Even we would sit in front of Prabhupada, and when people tell their stories about Prabhupada, they all heard it the way they heard it, because it has to be translated through our own mind, intelligence, false ego, our own desires. So sometimes it requires a good bang over the head. So that's what Prabhupada would do sometimes. But that gentleness, that, you know, like a rose, was also there. And then you can accept the bang. We don't. What time does class stop? I guess now 8:30. We have time. I'll tell you. Especially this took place here in Australia, and it was in Perth. It was my one time I got to go to Perth with Prabhupada, and he was there for, I guess, almost a week.
10 days.
10 days, over a week. And as Korma pointed out in his book, we were all enjoying prasadam very nicely there in Perth. When I came to Australia, it was like for a devotee, you know, from America, even coming to Australia was like, that was wonderful. It was just like milk products all over, and ghee and buckets and sour cream and double creams, just like in England, you know, just so many nice, wonderful milk products. So I took full advantage in my cooking of using, you know, more than I had ever used, making lots of rich prasadam. So, you know, and we had just traveled from wherever we had come from. So, you know, now everyone talks about jet lag, you know, as soon as you travel. There was no such thing as jet lag when Prabhupada was around. The term didn't exist. You weren't allowed to have jet lag. Prabhupada never had jet lag. As soon as he went somewhere, that was it. His watch changed and everything changed with it, you know. If he arrived in Delhi at 2 o'clock in the morning on a 10-hour flight, he would be on the morning walk at 6 o'clock in the morning. Not that he, you know, had this horrible flight, and adjust my diet, and, you know, I'll see you tomorrow morning, we'll just forget about today. And no, he just assumed, you know, the next schedule. So anyway, and we did that as well, but sometimes we would feel the effects a little bit. It seemed more. So now I've been with Prabhupada for over 2 years. So again, I was very accustomed to being with Prabhupada, and certain habits developed that I never ever had previously, like taking naps after lunch, which was unheard of in ISKCON temples. No one ever took naps. You know, nighttime was a nap, right? If you got 5 hours, you were lucky to get 5 hours before someone was beating on a pot or blowing conch shells in your ear. And so, anyway, it was just, at that place, it was just a small crew. It was just myself and Paramahamsa and Ganesh and I think a few of Jai Dharma and Amoga were staying there. And I was doing the cooking. So it might have been after a day or two. We were having nice lunches. We were enjoying. And I remember we all stayed in one room. And Prabhupada had his sitting room, his bedroom where he stayed. And I just remember one afternoon hearing a bell ring. You know, I was like completely asleep. I was in a very sound sleep, and this wasn't a nap, like I was just gone. But I finally heard a bell, and I was the only one that heard it. Everyone else was, you know, so sleepy. So I got up, and I knew I was in trouble. I could just, you know, I've been with Prabhupada 2 years now, so I knew I was in trouble. So I went into the room, you know, as quickly as I could, and then I offered obeisances as slowly as I could, because I wanted to exercise my eyelids, so that when I looked at him, he wouldn't see that I was completely asleep all that time, as if he didn't know. So I was down there, and I'm, and then, And then I just got up and looked at him, and that was it. And Prabhupada just started yelling, you know. And he's there, you know, like he would say, "I've been ringing this bell," he said, "for hours. No one hears it," he said. "Everyone is sleeping. Everyone's sleeping," he said, "like dead men." Prabhupada would use adjectives that really, you know, really got right to you. He said, "All sleeping like dead men." And then he would say, "Worse than karmis." So he said, "No karmis are sleeping." He said, "They're all working." He said, "They're all out working very hard, earning a living, huh? So they can eat nicely, have sex life." He would just run through every, and he's sitting there, and he said, "But not the devotees." He said, "They're very comfortably sleeping." He said, "Simply eating and sleeping." And so now you're awake now. You know? And my blood's flowing around very quickly now. The heart's beating, racing, and I'm wide awake. And he's there, "Where are the others?" And I thought, "I'm sleeping, Prabhupada, you know." He said, "Call them." And I thought, it was really different, because whenever Prabhupada wanted me to call someone to chastise him, I would always be very excited. Because he wasn't chastising you. So that was very good. And he was going to chastise, especially if it was like your god brothers in Prabhupada's entourage. We like to see, you know, one another get chastised by Prabhupada. So I'd be very happy, you know. But this time I wasn't happy, because Prabhupada seemed really upset, you know. So I went in, and the first one was Paramahamsa. And Paramahamsa was very sweet. Paramahamsa Maharaj, he's my friend. He was like 6'2", and you know, this big roly-poly. His face is in this book. I have a picture of his face, this big moon-like face, and very sweet. And I said, "Maharaj," I said, "Prabhupada wants to see you." And I said, "He's really mad, you know." I said, "He's really mad." So then I went over to the others, and I said, "Prabhupada wants to see you." So they were all happy, because Prabhupada wanted to see them. And they didn't know, and I didn't say anything. I just, you know, it was too difficult. I just said, "Ah, well, you know, they're going to get their first treat." Guru Kripa used to call it the hot sauce. You know, there's the sweet sauce and the hot sauce. So they were going to get their first taste of hot sauce. And they were just young boys, you know. Now, see, I was older now. I was a devotee for 4 years, so now I was a veteran. So we all came in, and Prabhupada just started the whole thing all over again. He said, "Everyone's sleeping like dead men," he said, you know. He said, "You're all worse than the karmis." He said, "Just sleeping." He said, "You can't even hear." He said, "This bell's ringing and ringing. No one wakes up." You know? So and on and on. He said, "So if you want to sleep," he said, "just go on then and sleep. Sleep all day." And we're all just sitting there. And he said, go sleep." We all got up, walked back to the room, and everybody's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But no, we wouldn't sleep, you know, all night long. No one was going to sleep. We were on this total anxiety, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So then the bell rings again. And I thought, "Oh, Krishna." So I go back in. And Prabhupada said, "So what is everyone doing?" I said, "Well, we're chanting, Prabhupada." He said, "Tell them to come in." So I went back in. So now I said, "Prabhupada wants to see you." Now everybody was a little more like cautious. They said, "Oh, what's he want?" You know? I said, "I don't know." I said, "He asked to see everyone." So he went in. And then Prabhupada was just so sweet, you know. And he said, "So," he said, "we can have class." And he pointed to the brahmacharya. He said, "So," he said, "get one of the books." And then he said, "Which one?" "Any book." Said, "Well, they're all Prabhupada's books. That's all we had. There was no other books." He said, "Any book," he said. So we got the book. And he said, and Prabhupada said, "Anywhere." He said, "Start reading, you know." So then we just started reading and passing the book around. And then Prabhupada was speaking and talking so sweetly. And in this way, then you realize Prabhupada, all he wanted to do was help us in our Krishna consciousness. Because to do these other things, sleeping too much, eating too much, you know, sleeping in the morning, not chanting your rounds, it means eventually you're going to fall away from Krishna consciousness. So all he ever wanted to do was help you stay in Krishna consciousness. That's all Prabhupada ever wanted, was to protect us from those clutches of Maya, because, you know, it creeps up very slowly. It's not all of a sudden you're just grabbed and you leave. No, it's just a very gradual process. It's like Krishna consciousness. It's a gradual. On a morning walk. So then, let me finish the story. So then, one evening comes. Now, Prabhupada, he's speaking to these guests who are coming, right? Teachers and different people in the government are coming, and high school teachers like that. So this one evening, this one young man's in there, and he's a teacher. And Prabhupada's speaking to him. And Paramahamsa and I are sitting in the corner. So Prabhupada, during that time, he kept talking about fourth-class men. And not particularly because he was in Australia and you guys were an extra class lower. He was just he was saying, there's no first-class men. He said, everyone's third-class. And then he said, not even third class, he said fourth class. He said, so our mission is trying to create a society of first class men. And this gentleman, this young man, he's listening, you know, and he's trying to understand. He was actually a very nice man. But Prabhupada kept hammering and saying, you know, but everyone, he said, there is no such people, you know. And then he said, and you, he said, and you're a fourth class man. And Paramahamsa and I are like, Prabhupada's so heavy, you know, like, this Prabhupada's heavy. But this man said, well, he said, how do I become first class? Well, see, Prabhupada could understand. He was hearing. He said, how do I become first class? And Prabhupada said, you have to hear from the pure devotee. And he said, well, you know, who is that? And Prabhupada pointed to Paramahamsa and me, and he said, they are. And we, a few hours before, we were worse than carnies. But we had been elevated just in the course of a day. We'd been elevated to pure devotees that day. So that was Prabhupada. He always just encouraged us. And we got his blessing. So I think we can stop here again, I think, this evening, I guess. This evening, I guess we'll be having class this evening. Please come. And Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much.